wearing my foundation's hat, and we'll talk about locality, reaction, and information as seen somehow from quantum perspective.
Basically, there will be two no statements, which are those two guys, and one yes statement, or square root of yes, we'll see. And the no statements, the first no statement is so-called Bell's theorem, the result by John Bell, which tells you that there is no classical-like description of quantum predictions. So quantum physics is something genuinely new, which you just cannot break, you cannot bring it back to classical stuff. And then you can try to ask, so what should I do? How should I think? How can I think about quantum phenomena if I cannot think in these classical terms? And recently, so this is the stuff with second no question I called Leggett theorem, because Don Leggett came with the theorem, which tells you that quantum predictions are also incompatible with some class of non-local reality theories, which is a generalization of the classical worldview. And finally, the yes statement would be that maybe one should think. One should think about quantum mechanics as a theory of systems with limited information resources. So I start with Bell's theorem. It's a theorem. It has assumptions, and it has a proof, and it has a thesis. And the assumptions are realism, which, just to put it short, unperformed measurements have well-defined yet unknown results. This means this is the worldview in which there exists objective reality, and science tries to learn something about this reality, and the particles carry properties, measurements also have some properties, and then when it comes to measurement, you actually pick up those properties of systems, pick up some properties of your measuring apparatus, like this setting, and then you can compute the outcome. So you don't really, you can then choose another property of your measuring system, like another setting, and you can compute another outcome. You don't have to really measure that. And locality, which comes from special relativity, which is distance systems are independent. So if something is not clear, please disturb me. I hope I try to make myself as clear as possible as I can. That's for now, operating fine. Okay, and this, so surprising result by Bell is now that this doesn't work. So nature is not like that. If you think in these terms, you should stop. You'll have troubles when it comes to quantum phenomena. Then, so this is, by the way, the world mechanism. And so how people prove these things? It's actually not that complicated. Just imagine you have a source of two particles, and then you will look at correlations, finally. So these two particles are sent somewhere, let's say here, Bob's room, and to Alice's room. And then within realistic worldview, you can take these properties of systems, which I just denote X. People sometimes call this hidden variables. And so when it comes to measuring, it's like a computer program. Within realism, you think about computer programs. There is a program which gives you the outcome, which say can be, since these are finally, I will make it for qubits or bits. So let's say that the outcomes are enumerated by +1 and -1. And so the program picks up the setting of Alice, setting of Bob. Locality comes into play that this program is completely independent, and the inputs are completely independent. Say K is, so A depends only on K, on local stuff. What Alice has chosen, what comes to her. Bob, the outcome of Bob depends on his local setting and what he has received. And these numbers do exist for all possible settings. That's the realism. So you can build up, you can then check easily that this identity holds, because whenever B1 is the same as B2, when 1, 2, I mean this 1x, 2x, then this is something, then this disappears, vanishes, it's just zero, they are the same, so minus zero. This guy is +/-2, you multiply it by +/-1, works. Then when B1 is different than B2, then these guys disappear and these guys are +/-2. So that's basically it. That's everything. So now you make it for many, many runs, because finally you would like to have it for correlations. And you define some quantities, which I call correlation functions, which are just the averages of products of measurement results. So you have a measurement here, you have a measurement there, you multiply them, and you average over many runs. And you see that whenever in all the theories based on the mentioned assumptions, such an inequality should hold, which is the result by Clauser, Horn, Shimoni, and Holt from 69, I think. And then to complete the proof of Bell's theorem, you look at quantum predictions, and it will be that they violate this inequality. So when you consider a singlet state, entangled state, and you know already from the previous talk that you can think about states of qubits as of vectors, let's say, of a single qubit as of a vector on a Bloch sphere, and then we can think about measurements which you can perform on a single qubit, again, in terms of vectors. So these are the vectors, the measurement vectors of Alice and Bob, and you can, just believe me, I can prove it later on for everybody who is interested, that the correlation function for a single state is just given by minus the scalar product of the corresponding measurement vectors, Bloch vectors, people call that. So then you can arrange the settings, say for Alice like that and for Bob like that, such that this is violated. So E11 is then, if you have your settings in the same plane, so this plane is just the same as that plane, the scalar product goes down to the cosine of a different angle between the settings, and you have this 1, 1, say 1, 1, the angle is pi over 4, so the cosine is square root of 2, 1/2 of square root of 2. Then you have the same for 1, 2, 2, 1, and the trick for 2, 2, you have 3/4 of pi, 3 pi over 2. And the corresponding cosine is a minus 1/2 square root of 2. So this finally gives you 2 square roots of 2. Ta-da! That's the result of Bell. this is okay, a bit of math, but this has a really nice meaning. So you were based on your classic, this is like a classical physics. This is the assumptions of locality and realism. They are all fulfilled by classical physics. So this is a bit more even than classical physics. We have some other stuff in classical physics. So, and all of these classical-like theories do not work. So finally, if you would observe this in your lab, this would mean that no classical realistic model, no classical local realistic model exists for those data. And people have looked at it, 2 and 2 square roots of 2 differ really a lot. So you should be able to see that easily. Already in the time when Clauser, Horn, Shimon, and Holt derived this stuff, there were some measurements on entangled particles, but people have measured only perfect correlations there. And what you really need for CHSH inequality, you need to go out to the plane. So there was a need for a new experiment. And in fact, there still is a need for a new experiment because there is not a single experiment really convincing that this all works. Whenever people look at particular experiments, there are always some loopholes and they which allow you to describe the measured data in local realistic terms. But all of these loopholes were closed in individual experiments. And so the milestones, I just written some milestones. Then you can ask concerning this local realistic stuff, I'm just briefly finishing this. What actually is the feature of quantum physics that really allows you to see this violation? And the first thought is, oh, that's entanglement. So you have these two particles, they are separated, and yeah, this must be entanglement, the strange correlations. And then, so if you consider such a state, generalized GHZ state, I think they call it, then for 2 qubits, this is all of this entangled states, pure entangled states violate CHSH inequality, which is very nice and simple explanation of what's going on. But surprisingly, when you go to 3 or more particles, Mermin was the one to derive corresponding Bell inequalities. And there, Gizem's group found that these states for some small alphas, so for cosine, which is so the state, let's say, close to a product, these states actually do not violate Bell inequalities, which is quite surprising on its own. And then even worse, people derive necessary and sufficient conditions for classical models in Bell experiments. And again, it appears that you can even find an explicit model for certain experiments. But the thing I want to say here is just that simply these tools are not good enough. If you go to multi-setting particles, they are not optimal, let's say, then you can prove that these states are non-classical. So the lesson from this is that no local realistic explanation of quantum predictions, no classical model. So can one go beyond this? And so as I already announced, then I will describe this model of Laggetts, models of Laggetts. And the theorem is there is a class of plausible non-local realistic models which conflicts quantum mechanics. So on. Yes. Yes. Sure.
It's like that, like you're making.
You mean the word plausible?
Yes. It's given that the Bohm models exist and they're plausible.
Yeah. So this is just, I guess, this is just an individual feeling. What is plausible for you and what is
so
plausible
for
someone?
Plausible for you.
Yeah, I think I would say that.
But you just said a plausible class. You didn't say all plausible non-realistic models, right?
Thanks. This is just a plausible class. Right. So concerning this Bohm's model, so this is this you cannot
within this the Bohm's model is not within this class. Well, whether I think it is plausible or not, I think I know too less. So I have to think more about Bohm's model. I don't want to make definite statement now. Okay. So why I think this is pretty plausible is that it talks about polarizations, some stuff known from physics already. And when you look at, for example, how Bohm describes entangled particles, then you will arrive, at least I read that in Holland's book, then at the very beginning, when the particles are emitted from the source, they carry no polarization. And the realistic vectors, polarization vectors, are zero. And then they somehow become to be vectors with length later on when they propagate through some magnetic fields. Is that plausible for you? Okay. So I will concentrate on this. So I like to describe it on this example because I think it's a lot of features are here. So consider this process of parametric downconversion. This is something which takes place. This phenomenon takes place in some crystals. When you shine light on those crystals, then sometimes photons from the laser split up into pairs. And one photon from a pair is always emitted in the upper cone, the other one on the lower cone. Moreover, these photons from this upper cone are well polarized in, say, horizontally, whenever you check it here, 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 not the intersection points yet. And the photons from here, everywhere except these intersection points, are also well polarized. You check it, you find it. So then you see it works like that. Consider this green circles. This picture is just the same stuff, but you look at it in this transversal plane, you can call it that. This is what you see. So now whenever you have a photon here, his partner is on the other side and symmetrically say to the laser beam. Then photon here, 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 here. And you have this crazy intersection point. So what happens? You can either have this guy is H polarized and this guy is V polarized, or you can have this guy is V polarized and this guy is H polarized. And if these two possibilities are indistinguishable, what quantum mechanics tells you, they will interfere. You should consider entangled state to describe that phenomenon. And how these non-local models try to describe this stuff is that, okay, in a way, this is let's say very much consistent, because they try to think about photons from intersections again as if they were well polarized. So they are well polarized here, 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 and now consider that here they are as well polarized. They are just mixtures of photons. But now you allow, so this won't make a job because you can because then if they will not in, if you really think that they are like particles, like classical physics, let's say, plus well-polarized photons. This is just Bell's theorem disqualifies that. What Laggett considers is that allow measurement outcomes at one side be dependent on some stuff on another side, on whatever you want, some non-local parameters. More mathematically, so this is where measurement outcomes can now depend on whatever parameter. In fact, in the other side, that is just illustrative to put the setting, I wrote the setting. And hidden variables split up, and you can distinguish their polarizations, polarization of a photon which goes to Alice, polarization of a photon which goes to Bob. And this means that, so now you think about these different polarizations are emitted, emitted, emitted. And then you can, if you would have access to the hidden variables, you could define a sub-ensembles in which polarizations are fixed. This is something which you cannot check in your lab because these are hidden variables. But this is the assumption of the models, that in the sub-ensemble in which these vectors are fixed, you should observe, you would observe your classical result, which is this guy is called the Malus law. And this is the fancy way, you know, on the block sphere of writing this famous cosine dependence. When you have light polarized like that, it propagates. Now you're measuring it with your analyzer at some angle. You should see intensity, which goes like cosine square. And correspondingly, you should see average of your measurement outcome, which goes like the scalar product of corresponding block vectors. The trick here is that already, when you have two well-polarized photons, their correlation function does not have to split into the products of individual averages, because they can be non-locally correlated. So this guy does not have to be this. And finally, what you observe in the lab, measurable quantities are additionally averaged over the distribution of polarization. So maybe just to put it short, so the models are like that. You believe in polarized photons. You average first over additional hidden variables, except polarization, which are here denoted x prime. And then on top of it, you average over distribution of polarizations. So we got it more or less. Then, OK, polarizations. So what this can do? So first of all, this can naturally explain, let's say, measurement results obtained on separable states, because they are just like mixtures of some polarizations. But you can also go further, and this also can also explain results on entangled states, obtained on entangled states. So what we could prove is that you can model quantum correlations of the singlet state minus A times scalar product B, which are the where A and B are measurement vectors, in all the situations in which Alice chooses her setting in one plane and Bob chooses his setting in another plane. This can, well, not another, any plane, so this could be another. This means that whenever you're using the singlet state and you want to violate your Bell inequalities, this can be described, because you always have two settings here and two settings here, and they always span a plane. So such a model explains all the Bell experiments, for example, in which CHSH was violated, and also some other quantum correlations. And this has also this nice feature that, despite being non-local, does not allow to communicate faster than light. This is because you have this polarizations. And on the level of averages, so from experimenter's point of view, you average it such that you have the Malus's law has to be fulfilled. And you see, it's this guy is just fully local, let's say. So on average, you have locality here. It's like U times KK. All these non-localities have to average out. This is what really allows you to prove this, then the nice results. So as before means that as for Bell's theorem, now you can show an inequality which is fulfilled by all of such models and which is violated by quantum predictions. And this is the identity from which you start, which is, I put those red letters to show that it doesn't matter on which measurement results now depend. This just works for any AB equal to plus minus one. Whenever they are the same, so the product is one, they are correlated, let's say, then this vanishes and one, yeah, works. And this guy is then two or minus two, but in the models this is two, so we have minus one plus two, one. And similarly, whenever A is not equal to B, then you see, then you can check that it's minus one. But then the proof is a bit more involved than in usual CHSMs, and I will not give it. Just I will go directly to the final inequality, which, one thing. So you see, just concerning this, what this can do. You see that one could model with this stuff the results on the singlet state whenever you measure here in a plane and here in a plane. But, and interestingly, this is what people have measured usually are in fact correlations. People have checked CHSH, so inequality for which this settings are in local planes. But if you believe in quantum mechanics and you would like to disprove this kind of stuff, then you should go outside of the plane. You should go to the third dimension. It's, in a sense, that's quite a resembling situation. So to prove Bell's theorem, show somehow experimentally that the world is not locally realistic, you had to go to the plane outside the perfect correlations, and now you have to go outside the plane and measure some new correlations. And this inequality indeed takes into account, when you derive that, it forces you to choose your setting in an orthogonal plane. It has to be consistent, of course. And importantly, these guys here are not the usual guys.
Doing mid-sentence. I was trying to understand the distinction between this and the usual Bell setup. How is this more general? So here you have two hidden variables for the polarization, and you have this K and this L.
Which are the settings.
Which are the what? The
settings. This K and L denote the number.
Oh, K and L are settings. So the difference, you could treat K and L as hidden variables, but I guess the difference is that you don't assume there's any joint probability distribution.
For K and L? No, definitely. These are the settings. So it's just, in a way, it's similar.
So you're saying the result here could depend on the setting of it.
Right.
But only in this particular.
Wait. The result on one side can depend on parameters on another side. For example, the setting.
Yeah.
And this identity here, you know, I could put here whatever, the time which is there, or I don't know, what I have, whatever other non-local parameter.
So those are
and not only from that lab, but for whatever other parameter in the universe. The point of this is that this guy holds for all this A and B equal to plus minus 1. You see, this involves only how to put it? The difference between this identity and the identity which I have used for CHSH inequality is that now, for the CHSH, I was using measurement outcomes for different settings. Okay, I had A1, B1 plus B2, A2, again B1 minus. So there was A1 involved, A2, B1, and B2. And here, it's just for a particular experiment, I chose my settings, and for only this experiment, this identity holds. It doesn't matter what is the non-local dependence here. You can put whatever you want. And the trick is to use average correlation functions, which operationally would mean that you have a setting vector, say A for Alice, setting vector for Bob, and there is a certain angle between them. They span a plane. What you should do, you should measure these correlations, then rotate a bit, measure again, rotate a bit, measure again, and in this way, you obtain the averaged correlations, averaged over rotations within a plane, spanned by these vectors. And again, you can check. So quantum mechanics for single state, the correlations of single state depend only on the difference angle, so you don't have to average. It's just, you just put into the inequality directly this minus cosine, and you can check, and you can, there is a certain optimal angle for which the violation of the inequality is optimal, which is maximal, and in that case, the bound is equal to this value, the quantum value is equal to this number, let me just say that they are pretty close. And for the same settings, so simultaneously, you see that that CHSH inequality is also violated. So then it's the situation in which there is a set of correlation functions which cannot be described in local realistic way and cannot be described in the non-local way. So this fact that the bound is so close to quantum predictions, if you believe in quantum and you think that this is what you should measure in your perfect setup, this sets some restrictions or sets requirements on your setup. And in particular, in fact, you never, in the experiment, you never observe this perfect cosine. Say these are the correlations. But you always, you have some points here, da 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 da. And what you actually could, should, what you actually do, you feed up, so cosine fits pretty well, but you should change this minus one into some parameter, and this is called divisibility. This tells you how well you can see the fringes, how good your interference is, and good meaning the close to quantum. The other problem is how to measure these average correlations. This way, they were averaged over the rotations in the plane, so there's really a lot of rotations in the plane. So what we at first did, we just assumed, so we checked that for a few settings, and then see that, well, this is fulfilled, but then we assumed, finally, because we didn't check it for all possibilities, so that's why we assumed that the produced state is rotationally invariant, which allows you to put, not to average over all of this stuff, but just to put one, whichever correlation function into the inequality. But this will be relaxed soon. I mean, I will talk about it soon. Finally, we checked whether maybe somebody already did this experiment, and no, that's why there was a need for a new experiment. So this is the experiment, but since there are no experimentalists, I think I will not describe it too much. This is the typical, say, correlation experiments for people from different fields. You have this, the same the source which I have explained, and two photons or pairs of photons are emitted, and then you measure something here, you measure something there. At the end, you bring the data together, you compute your products, and that's it. You check whether the inequality is violated or not. And in fact, it is both of them. Both, and what we experimentally find, that this is the bound valid for this class of non-local models. These are the measurement results, and this solid line is quantum prediction, which takes into account visibility, which was very good, 99%, and surpasses the required limit. This is important. And the same moment, the CHSH inequality was violated. So there is a set of certain, so there is a set of correlations which cannot be described in both local and non-local ways.
But hang on, has that experiment been done or not?
Yes.
Oh,
that's the data.
So that's the new experiment that you proposed and somebody did it? Or you said there's a need for a new experiment. Is that the data from the new experiment that's been done?
So this is you assume there's a need for the new experiment in which you would like to relax this assumption, this additional assumption of rotational invariance. So what I now present is the data for the experiment in which we assume rotational invariance. Okay, and now I will go to the relaxation of that assumption. So in fact, the trick is very simple. In fact, it appears that instead of rotating and averaging over the whole plane, it's enough to take two correlation functions. Then you can take three, four, etc. You can take whatever the simplest case, whatever number. The simplest case is to take two correlation functions, say for the angle, so whatever suitably arranged. Two correlation functions. This is because whenever in this proof there always is the let's say a sine of some angle, which is this guy, and then plus the sine of the angle of this correlation function, and then it's in the modulus, and then when you have the sine plus cosine modulus of sine plus cosine, you can estimate it and you can go further, and then you again see that this can be violated. The only thing, so the price you have to pay for this, is that there was a factor here which was bigger than one, and now it disappeared. So the experimental requirements are even higher than before. And well, I should say that the same result was obtained in Singapore. So theoretically, they just derived the same stuff, which is really incredible. Like, you see that? But experimentally, they have measured not only. So we have performed this experiment, and the other prize is that more settings are involved. So we have this is a bit more involved experimentally. But you can measure this, and these people from Singapore also measured that. And we used some new source of entanglement, which is really nice. And maybe I just give you a brief idea how this works. Like, this is what is called the Sagnac interferometer. This is the triangle. And now from here, the laser comes. So imagine this is polarized like this. Then it is transmitted. It goes through some crystal, which
which produces down converted photons. One of the photons is H polarized, the other is V. And then the H one goes through, the V one is reflected. This is the polarizing beam splitter, which has this property that H goes through, V is reflected. Then so you have H here and V here. Then if you would use another light polarized in orthogonal direction, this guy would be reflected. Again, two photons are down converted, one H, one V, and this time H goes here because it goes through and V is reflected. And finally, when you use your light at 45 degrees, you have entanglement. And that's very stable, and some whatever experimentalists are very happy with this. This works pretty well. And you can see that this new inequality is also violated. So now something about Bohm, maybe. So what is the lesson from that? Is that from Bell's theorem, you learn no local realistic explanation. From this Legati inequality, you learn that some classes of non-local realistic theories also fail in describing the experimental data. So then you can really consider somehow, you can stick to some other non-local realistic models like Bohm theory, or you can go beyond, or you can just consider something different. Like what we are doing really seriously is that we think that maybe why not to give up realism and try to find out some non-realistic theories, or that maybe what we are doing is we're trying to look at quantum mechanics from information perspective. That's the theory about information. And what I mean with that, so first there will be a jump. Now I will talk a bit about mathematics, and then I will link it to physics such that I hope you will see that it makes sense and it is convenient to think in terms of information about quantum phenomena. So a bit of math, consider binary functions of a binary argument. So both of this y and x are 0, 1. X is 0, 1. You have four such functions. 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. Not much. Then you can encode these functions in some black boxes just to make a bit of link between mathematics and physics. You can always encode the function in a black box such that you have a black box, you have two positions there, 0, 1, and whenever your f of 0 is 0, say you don't put something on position 0, and whenever it is 1, you put something there. And the same for f of 1, but now for position 1. Then consider such a table, which I call the table of logically complementary properties of functions. This is the table. So here I listed the certain properties, which are the value of f of 0, the value of f of 1, the value of the sum. And here in the columns are given the functions for which this is 0 or 1, 0 or 1. So you see, f of 0 is 0 for functions y1 and y2, 1, 2. And one for y3, 4, and the same stuff for the other rows. Now, in a sense, this guy encodes complementarity. Whenever you have numbers, say consider numbers from this cell, or from any other cell, but just for the sake of example, consider functions from this cell. These functions appear in two other cells of two other rows. So when you have defined property of f of 0, then you have no clue about f of 1 about f of 0 and f of 1, if you're limited to one bit, and so such that you don't keep these two bits simultaneously. Imagine you're limited to store one bit. If you know f of 0, this is in the structure of this table. This is really the logical property of this table. It's no physics yet. If you have fixed property f of 0, you have no clue about f of 1 and no clue about the sum f of 0, about this parity, let's say, question. But now you can try to see whether you can access these questions from using your quantum systems. And just imagine a qubit goes through such a black box. And now the functions are encoded in the following way. Whenever f of 0 or f of 1 are 0, you put nothing in your black box. Say that this qubit is a polarization of a photon. I like to think in these terms. So then, whenever f of 0 is 1, then you apply sigma x, which means that you put certain crystals, half-wave plate, whatever, on certain position here. And whenever f of 1 is 1, you apply sigma z. and here, you put a certain crystal here. So this is operationally defined. Like you put crystals at certain positions or not. This is how you encode your functions. And then the trick is that when you have this, now imagine you throw in z plus state and you measure finally in the z basis. Then what happens? Well, you will have some phase from sigma z, which you don't care because you will measure in the z basis. And this will, and the state will be flipped f0 times. If f0 is 0, it will not be flipped. If f0 is 1, it will be flipped. So finally, you learn that using the state from the z basis and measuring in z basis, you learn this property of the function, of binary functions, which are encoded in the black box. And probably you can, you know, see how this works. When you throw in, say, x state, then it is flipped f1 times, and you learn the value of f1 by its final measurement in the x basis. And here the miracle appears that whenever you throw y state, then it's such that it's the eigenstate of the product. So whenever 0, 0, whenever these functions are the same, then it will not be flipped. And whenever they are different, then it will be flipped. So the y basis reveals information about this third property. And so let me just tell you that. So first of all, it's really incredible that there are three of those properties and not more, not less. And this exactly is like in quantum mechanics. Then we were looking for such tables for higher number of items, always for the square numbers. And it always is agrees quantum, the number of quantum complementary measurements, which I find really amazing. It's, so nature somehow cares about this. Oh, that was bad. Cares about these functions. And cares about these tables. Ah. Then, so maybe that's even good. So just keep in mind that, imagine you have your qubit here after the black box. Then what this tells you, imagine that also that the initial state was Z plus. Then just after the black box, if it was not flipped, you learn that this qubit encodes information, F of zero is zero. That's in this state now. Then you have, then in Z minus, there is information F of zero is one. It's orthogonal one. In X plus is F of one is zero, and F of one is one for the orthogonal one, and similarly for Y. And the quantum measurements, so the states encode properties of the functions, and quantum measurements actually check for the values of certain, check for these properties. I don't want to say too much. And now, how do you, what is complementarity? Why are these results random? It's like you prepare, imagine you prepare your system in the Z plus state and it has information F of zero is zero, but you measure it in the whatever other X basis. And it is asked about question about value of F of one. And it just, there's no information there about F of one, and there's no information from which you could infer the value of F of one. There's no reason to give any particular answer. So even more, if you are thinking your qubit is limited to one bit such that it cannot carry answers for both f of zero and f of one, it just carries about one, it carries the value, say f of zero is zero, and that's it. There's no reason to give any particular value for f of one. So generally speaking, there's not enough information in the system to keep deterministic answer to all possible questions, and maybe you see that there should be, so you have no reason to give the answer to the question about the value of f of one. So, or maybe no, let me skip it. And in this way I go to the outlook, and then you can really try to formalize that mathematically, these thoughts about information which I just gave you. And we are thinking about, and you can go to logic. And this is like these questions about f of zero and f of one, they are like propositions. They have values 0, 1 about which you can think about like the truth values. So the value, consider you consider this property f of zero. Then you can make the proposition that f of zero is zero. Then if it's true, so well, then it is zero. And if it's false, then it is one. So this is just the same. This is just rephrasing of what I have shown you. And in this way, one could think that quantum system encodes certain axioms. So the fixed value of the proposition is the axiom. And then that quantum measurement checks for the truth of certain propositions. And then we try to argue now that, the randomness of quantum outcomes, say in quantum experiments, you see the randomness always when the proposition associated with the measurement is undecidable in the set of axioms defined by the state, which is there, which is about the, by the information encoded in the state. So this is very much in the spirit of Chaitin, which tells you that you should, which tells you that you cannot prove theorems which contain, in a sense, more information than it is in the given set of axioms. And just concerning these Leggett models, what would be nice to do? Maybe because I thought that this would be really nice. I hope to invest in that at certain moment sometime to find a loophole free, to find an inequality which could be tested with ions, because with these Leggett models you don't have locality restrictions, so you can use the system which are really arbitrarily close to each other. Then, but the trouble with ions is that they are the visibilities of interference are not so good. So maybe if one goes to higher number of particles, there the visibility will be better and one could perform such a test. So the last slide, I showed you the Bell's theorem, which is just a brief description that nature cannot be described by classical light models. Then a plausible class of non-local realistic models was considered, which conflicts quantum predictions and experiments I also showed you. And maybe the way out of all of this is just to think about quantum information as quantum mechanics as a theory of systems with limited information capacity. So thank you. Information resources. Yes.
Leah, let me ask two questions. One overtly philosophical, and the other one slightly less, but still pretty philosophical. So you said that your group, or the group you're associated with, is toying with the idea of giving up realism. Are you really going, so this is the overtly philosophical one, are you really going so far as to saying, to say that you're toying with the idea that there's no universe out there without observers about to have a look at it? That's the overtly philosophical one. And the second one is slightly less philosophical. And that is, in this toy model that you're talking about that has something to do with Chaitin's theorem, you pose it as a quantum measurement is testing the truth value of a proposition. Now, surely propositions have truth values even when no one's having a look. So if that's how you're modeling it, how is that giving up realism?
And answer both questions in order.
And that's important. So that was the first, that was the requirement.
So maybe I will give you my personal view. So of course I believe that there is some stuff is going on somewhere, but I'm not sure whether correct is the definition of realism in this spirit which was here in this Bell's theorem and Leggett's theorem, that the measurement outcomes of all possible experiments which you can perform on the systems are well defined. But in general, so well, that's, damn it, it's really, you know, things are there. So this philosophical questions that nothing exists, you mean, or what do you mean by realism then? Well, then I mean this realism that all men went.
Unless it means you turn towards the Democratic Party and you embrace liberalism, but you don't mean that.
Excuse me. So, the second question. So the second question, I think maybe this is really a nice illustration of what I mean. If you have your system, so I think about it like that. You have your system which encodes some information just after the black box. It encodes information, say, about that f of 0 is 0. But you're asking it about something which is just, so what's my second name? Say. That's
a
question.
I don't know what your second name is.
Right, exactly. And this quantum system just doesn't know. You see? It's...
Well, I don't know, but you apparently know.
Right. But there, you, well, do I? That's not so clear, even to me. But, so I think that it encodes the information, say, f of 0 is 0, but you ask about f of 1, and you're limited. You don't have that information. That's the only bit you have there is just used, and it cares f of 0 is 0. So in this sense, there's no information then about any particular outcome of f of 1, and it will give random results. That's how I imagine this.
Second question here. So in the beginning, you said that we will rule out, sort of, again, it's going to be a little bit about realism. Newtonian mechanics is a nice realistic theory, right?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that.
Newtonian gravity, point particles, potential, classical, yes.
Oh, sorry, yes. Okay, I tried one.
But it's easy to cook up measurements in that theory, which violates Bell inequalities.
Oh, wait. You have a classical theory,
oh, yes.
Now you're making custom, when you're making measurements.
Classical mechanics.
Right, but then you have to give up some other assumptions which enter there, which I just didn't mention explicitly, like
yeah,
freedom
so
of choice and...
No, it's, well, that theory is a non-local theory. So that's a...
Ooh,
I mean,
then I don't understand the question. No.
Well, Newtonian mechanics is a non-local theory. It's not a local theory. So, I mean, it's not... In this long stretch of time, which we have been dealing with non-local theories like Newtonian mechanics, Newton was unhappy with it, etc. But then there was a short time, basically, when we got to electrodynamics and so on, we started dealing with local theories. So in a sense, Bell's theory, you can view as just returning to this non-local type of theories. But that's just one comment first, that this is not something new with that we have non-local theories in nature. We have seen them for the majority of time. Second point is that, could you state, there was one sentence, what do you mean by realism? Could you write it down mathematically what it means? I mean, there's a huge literature, what we mean by local theories. There's all this nice work by Bell and others, Shimony, and exactly what does it mean now?
Well, now, I don't know if it's now, but you know, there was the paper by Asher Peres called that, exactly I think like that, it's a thing which sounds trivially, that unperformed experiments do not have results.
Yes. But did you write down anything mathematical? I mean,
no.
It seems to me that these two requirements, at least now, are on completely different bases. Locality, you know, is a precise mathematical requirement. And every time I see this word realism, it's sort of, okay, now you specify it mathematically, you show how it comes into the proof. I see one possibility in your proof, that's, you actually said there should be these outcome functions.
Right.
Yes. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
That's realism.
Yes, here is.
And then there's a comment, if you look at Bell's theory of local vehicles, for example, or about nanogalaxies, that assumption never goes into the proof. So Bell's theorem has been generalized not to include those things.
You mean for stochastic theories or something?
Yes, exactly.
So the final question is, do I consider stochastic theories as realistic?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes, because there is always an... Ah, but now I'm in trouble. So what I wanted to say, maybe, and then we can try to discuss that. What I wanted to say is I would consider such theories as realistic because you can always find another one which would be deterministic. So it's just so that this your stochastic theory is just the, let's say, the average level of some other deterministic theory. Oh yeah, and since I'm a realist, I can do it now. Yeah, so that's it. That's why I consider it realistic.
It would be nice, I mean, if somebody wrote the paper, you know, saying...
I agree.
This is realism?
I agree,
and
yes.
And how it enters.
You know, we are...
Because otherwise I don't know what it means.
Yes, I fully agree.
Well, here...
This is not...
Well, one thing could mean here is that you're using the standard probability rules for the definition of X. I mean, you have to have a probability between 0 and 1 for...
Yeah.
Or, well, I mean, yeah, like X is... I mean, the way I usually see the Bell inequalities, I mean, the expectation value is a classical expectation value, which means that the probability used for it satisfies all the laws of classical probability theory. For instance, you can't use a quasi-probability. Like, if you were to allow the probability to go negative, then you could presumably reproduce quantum mechanics, because that's exactly what the Wigner function is.
Well, there's one more question.
Well, I was just going to make a remark about stochastic generalizations of Bell theorem. I think it should be borne in mind that if you go to a stochastic generalization, stochastic invariable theory, if you believe in the strict correlations in the singular state, for example, or the strict anticorrelations, that theory necessarily collapses to a deterministic theory. So you're right back where you started.
That's fine.
But the other question I wanted to ask was, when you refer to the Leggett theory, you say that, you know, it corresponds to a plausible non-local theory. I take it part of the plausibility has to do with the fact that it doesn't predict violations of superluminal signaling. Okay, so it's consistent with, I mean, of course it's consistent with another signaling theorem in quantum mechanics. Now, that seems to suggest, at least in the minds of a lot of people, that it's also consistent with special relativity.
Yes.
But that condition of the theory already held in the original Bell theory. In the original Bell theorem, you had local hidden variable theories, but the question now is, how do you justify the locality condition? It doesn't seem as if special relativity is the right way of thinking about it. Because if non-locality violates special relativity, then the Leggett models also violate special relativity. Then it doesn't make them very plausible.
So your question is, are Leggett's model relativistically, say, consistent?
How do you motivate locality if it's not by way of field relativity?
I guess I would assume that I motivated by relativity, then what is the problem?
Well, then the Leggett theory is not
plausible for you.
Why? It violates special relativity.
But what is that? This is exactly what I don't get. Why do you say that Leggett's theory violates special relativity?
Because it's not local.
Because it's not local.
Ah, on the level of hidden variables.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's not really.
It has a preferred frame. It has a preferred frame, kind of, right?
I would say so, but I think I didn't get your point.
Well, if I could just try. These theories, the non-local theories in quantum mechanics, the non-local hidden variable theories, do have a preferred frame.
Right.
Such as the Broglie-Bohm theory has a preferred frame. But phenomenologically, you can't find it. So it's consistent with the relativity principle. At least if you consider relativity principles phenomenological. And a lot of people would say these theories are non-local, but they do not violate special relativity, at least in any operational sense.
Okay. I'm not sure, but I would guess at first glance that Leggett's model is of this time.
Exactly. Yes. So now the question is, how then do you motivate the locality assumption in the first place?
Yeah.
I don't even understand the question. The whole point is to get a theory that agrees with the experimental realities, right? And the experimental reality is that we don't observe violations of no signaling, right? So if you did, then it clearly doesn't agree with quantum mechanics.
No, but the Bohm theory, for example, is non-local, but it's consistent with no signal.
There's a distinction between strong locality and weak locality. So, non-locality, whatever. So, weak non-locality is of the Leggett form. Or, the Leggett form is an example of weak non-locality. It depends on non-local settings.
So, this is the signaling condition. Like, weak satisfies this non-signaling, non-strong.
Yeah. So, the strong would include signal, non-local signaling. And you don't have that in this. So I mean,
yeah,
there's still a sense in which it's local in this, no signaling sense.
Yeah, there's no way then to argue for the locality as in the first, the way you see it, I think then I cannot answer it. I think I cannot argue then for locality. But that's just fine. Well, okay, let's discuss it.